Welcome back to the Urban Martial Artist. Today we're going to be talking about the meaning of black belt. And if
Part
you're new
two.
here, whoa, we're going to do intros. Sure, I'm Rachel.
I'm David.
I'm Yoshi.
I'm Anna.
And if you're new here, this is a podcast done by working professionals that also moonlight as martial artists in our evening free time.
Hello, everyone. This is Yoshi. I'm the editor of the podcast. We had such a good conversation in this episode that we ended up splitting into two parts. So we have part two, which is this episode, and which will be followed up by part three. So be on the lookout on our blog and our social media sites on Facebook and Instagram. For now, this is part two.
We recorded a podcast between me and David doing the meaning of black belt. And during that discussion, David and I, we pretty much thought, since it was just the two of us, we really felt like we needed a part two to that podcast. And since Rachel and Anna, neither of you were on that episode, we feel like
How rude.
time, availability, all that fun stuff, life gets in the way. We felt like that we should do a part two with the two of you. So we're going to start this podcast with the same question we started with the first one, and said, "What does the black belt mean for you? What is that? What does it mean for you?" Either one of you can start that.
Okay, personal definitions. Got it.
Go ahead, Rachel.
We're both just like waiting it out, like which one of us is gonna do it. Sure. That's such a big question. Mm-hmm. I feel like, oh gosh, black belt means so many things. It means leadership, I guess, is the very first word that comes to mind, right? Once you become a black belt, right? There's this expectation that you are now in a leadership position. People look up to you. The colored belts look up to you. So there's this automatic assumption, right, that you are in front of the class at some point, whether it's leading warm-ups, leading a drill, leading actual class, but leading is a really, really big part of what black belt means. But to me, the other really big thing that it means is it signifies like a dedication of a continued journey. Like this is me officially dedicating my life to continue in the way of martial arts, whatever that looks like, right? So yes, it's a rank, but to me it's just, and I feel like to most martial artists, it means so much more than that. It's not just what's on your waist. It's a continued lifestyle that never goes away.
Really? Yeah. I don't know if this was me just being like taking everything super seriously, but I remember when I was like a blue belt, or my instructor would always say that the black belt is the beginning, or sorry, it's the end of one life cycle and the beginning of the next. So, I mean, I was like 16, so I took that super seriously, and I kind of thought of that in a couple different ways, like looking back on it. And like the first way that I kind of think, or I guess like in my mind, there's three different aspects, I guess, of black belt and the different, you know, kind of things that come with it. The first is personal, where it's now you've reached a higher level of skill where, you know, you kind of like you've demonstrated to not just yourself, but other people that you can be competent in these techniques that you've been working on for, you know, X amount of years.
Yeah, definitely.
That's kind of like the base level. And then the next level, and again, my opinion is that now black belt also means that it's your responsibility to kind of take over your own training, whether or not you keep, you know, going to class as a black belt. Now it's a little bit more, the shift of the focus on your training is now kind of your responsibility. A lot of the times, especially if, you know, you're in a studio with, that's a little bit smaller. A lot of the times after you get your black belt, you're going to have to, you know, help teach the lower ranks and everything. So unless you are diligent and kind of make a plan to keep training yourself and what you like, you're going to start to feel kind of burnt out. So that's why I think of that. And I kind of teach that a little bit to my black belts as well. Like, hey, you know, this is kind of now your responsibility to work on what you need. And then when we get to class, it's kind of your job to, you know, ask questions or, you know, because we might not necessarily get a chance to get to the black belt curriculum, you know, every class or even, you know, every other class. And then the third part for me is kind of like what you were mentioning, Rachel, is the service or the giving back. And that is, especially in our association, since we're volunteer based, if you don't help and you don't kind of start giving back, then it really starts to affect not just yourself, but kind of the region or even just your studio at that point. Because, you know, also like how you mentioned, Rachel, now you're seen as, you know, a leader and you kind of have to hold yourself to that. Mm-hmm. So you have to, you know, you have to do what you think that a black belt should do. And obviously that's a little, you know, subjective. Some people have different opinions, but at least for me, I always thought black belts should be the people that, you know, they're the first people to show up for a tournament, for an event, blah, 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 and they're the last people to leave. They're always looking for different ways to kind of help out. And like I said, it's subjective. This is kind of how I guess, think of it. There are other people that, you know, may not follow this, but that's kind of how I feel. And same thing with, you know, like stepping up if there's somebody who, if they need an extra judge at a tournament or something, you know, kind of like looking for those areas where you can kind of just help out. Like I said, especially as a volunteer organization, like if we didn't have the black belts helping out, we would have our tournaments and our events would run a lot less smoothly. So yeah, I think those are kind of my main three with, I guess, the meaning of black belt.
It's funny that you mentioned something that I hadn't thought of until right now, but when you were talking about, you know, kind of how a black belt is perceived, you know, we talk about it in the sense of like how a black belt is perceived to us as martial artists, right? Like we have our own expectations of what a black belt looks like within, you know, whatever your martial art is, there's this perception as a martial artist. But it's funny because there's also a perception outside of the martial arts of what a black belt is, right? Mm-hmm. And I have used I just had an interview this week, ironically. And one of the questions that came up as like a star formatted question, right? Situation, task, action, result. I had to answer a question of name a time that you had to set a goal for yourself. How did you achieve that goal? It was like, oh, my second degree black belt test. Like we are automatically associated with goal setting and achieving within the martial arts, but it directly applies to like the working world as well, right? And I've had conversations with managers before when I bring up, whether it's in an interview, I bring up that I'm a black belt or just in conversation, like my boss, you know, just tries to get to know people, you know, asks, oh, what are you doing this weekend? And it's like, oh, I have training or whatever. there's this perception from outside of the martial arts community of what a black belt is. When people hear that I'm a black belt, they go, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you carry yourself a certain way. Like, there's this, like, even if you're not in the martial arts, you know what a black, when somebody says I'm a black belt, you know, that still registers to people as having skills of leadership and confidence and integrity, right? These things that people seek out in leaders in business are exactly what we hold ourselves to in our own standards as martial artists. And so that's another thing that what you had said just struck a chord with me, especially after this week, having used that as an interview example. I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, people who aren't martial artists still have this expectation that, you know, they hold us to these high standards just as much as we hold ourselves to those high standards, right?
Right, yeah. And like, I was, when I got my first degree, like I said, I was, you know, 16, so I was still pretty young. And I, like, I remember feeling after I got promoted, like I didn't deserve it. And I felt that way for maybe like a month or two, because, you know, I saw the other black belts in our school and I, you know, was comparing myself to them. And I was just like, I don't feel like I'm at that same level. So then I kind of took it upon myself to be like, okay, what can I do to feel like a black belt now? So I think that's where that, like, the expectations of others also kind of, like, mm-hmm. it might have been a little bit of my imposter syndrome, but I think that also
we've
kind
all
of
been there, right?
You know, yeah. And, you know, it's cool too that you mentioned that, because I remember when I first started karate, my mom was talking to me about it and stuff, and she explained, because she actually did martial arts for a very small time in her, I think when she was in college, she, like, you know, did some martial art for a couple of months. Yeah. And she told me that, well, first she told me that she knew a guy who had to get his hands registered as weapons. And that was like,
is that true? Did people actually have to do that?
I believe they did.
I've heard this rumor before, but I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool rumor. I like it.
It is, yeah. That may or may not have been one of the reasons I started. And then she also told me that, you know, black belt is something that it's, you know, it stays with you forever. Like, you can stop training, but, you know, once you've achieved this black belt, like, that's kind of, it's a, you know, widely known thing. It's like, oh, you're a black belt, oh wow, you know, that signifies something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's kind of cool how, like, how you mentioned, a lot of people don't really know much about martial arts other than, like, oh, black belt, that means you're good,
right?
That,
yeah,
means, you know, you achieved a certain level. So yeah,
I don't know about you, David, but they covered quite a few of the questions that we had prepared for this interview. Whoops. That's awesome. No, you guys,
that's good. That's good. Awesome. It feels like a free-flowing discussion, which is very good. I guess a question I wanted to ask both of you, we talk about how, you know, once you get a black belt, you can't teach. We see people that do get their black belt and they still decide to just train for themselves. Mm-hmm. But do you believe that if you're a black belt, it's not just you can teach, but you should teach?
That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't feel like it should be an expectation that you should teach, because not as much as we have, you know, already said, right? Like, it is about being a leader, but you can be a leader in more ways than just being on the floor teaching something. And not everybody is in fact a good teacher. I'm just going to say that right now. Like, there's, and that might make some enemies, right? But some people are just not good at instructing. That's just not part of their wheelhouse, you know, but they're really good at training. And so maybe what their wheelhouse is they're a really good partner for somebody on the floor. Maybe they're not good in front of the class, but maybe, you know, yeah, they want to be training, but maybe they're really good at sparring. So maybe they end up accidentally teaching somebody some really good sparring techniques as a partner. Or, you know, maybe they're, you know, just in being on the floor training and showing their dedication as a black belt, that's still being a leader in showing up to class, right? And being consistent in training. Being in front of the class isn't for everybody, nor should it be, in my opinion, because it's just not, some people just don't have that ability, and that's fine. So I don't think you should force somebody into something that they're just not going to succeed at or really want to succeed at, because then I feel like the product at the end result is like, now they're resentful, and the students that they're teaching are like, I don't like this person, or what, you know what I mean? They're like, I didn't learn anything from so-and-so. They were such a, like, it just, it feels like a lose-lose scenario at that point if you force somebody into it. So that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that teaching is a requirement, because again, you know, there are different paths you can take as a martial artist, you know, like kind of how Rachel said, there are some people that aren't good at teaching, but I'd take it a step further and say there are some people that just don't want to teach.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't necessarily see a problem with that. If people are just more like concerned on advancing their own like personal martial arts skills, I don't necessarily see a problem with that. And I kind of agree, you know, with Rachel, like they can help and, you know, teach in different ways, but more so like be an example. But I would also say that selfishly, you do learn things better as you teach them. In our art, after you get first degree black belt, you get a couple more forms, you get a couple more, you know, one step techniques. But in general, I mean, you have 2 years as a black belt until you get to your second degree. So, you know, you can learn all the new material, but you're still not going to be used to the same kind of, not instant gratification, but before, you know, like in our art, you test every 3 or so months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the pace is now going to go a lot slower. So now there's also a emphasis on learning the deeper meaning behind some of the things you already know. And at least for me, I didn't start to understand those things until I broke them down to teach them. So this might be, again, this to each their own, but I know, at least for me, I encourage people to teach, even if they think they're not a good teacher, if they think, you know, blah, 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 just because it does enhance your own knowledge of the technique and skill.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying they have to, you know, lead a whole class themselves or open a club for themselves, but, you know, helping out in ways, I think that also enhances your training more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you know, if you are not interested in that at all, then, you know, that's when I start to see people not say getting bored of the art, but, you know, they start to feel like, you know, they're like, okay, what next? And it's like, well, let me see what you already know. And then you look at what they already know and you're like, okay, well, you could work on this and this, but, you know, there might not be that patience there because, again, you know, waiting another 2 years to test versus another 3 months, it gets a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of a mind switch or shift. So I think that's also where kind of the patience of black belt starts to, you know, starts to manifest itself, I guess.
And that could be, I feel like this could be an entire separate episode is just like what it's like to teach, right?
Completely, yeah, 100%.
So maybe we'll save that for later, but I did want to make a comment though of to Anna's point that, yeah, not everybody has to teach or should have to teach, but there, I also believe that you're missing out on a lot if you don't at least try, even if it's just like the gratification of seeing somebody have the light bulb moment on a technique for the first time, like you as another black belt, you as an instructor of sorts, whether you're a full-time instructor or just an instructor for the day or for that one little training session, whatever the case may be, right? to see somebody have a light bulb moment and get it and it clicks is so satisfying. And so it's like, I feel like there is something that you miss out on if you don't at least give it a shot, you know?
Yeah, you never know what you like until you try it.
Exactly.
Too, so.
Yeah.
The way that I always saw it is that to figure out how to teach and to convey a message to someone, you need to break it down into simple, concrete, and understandable terms.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, you'll be able to look back and apply that to your own technique in a way that becomes like so repeatable, especially in the finer details, making those little changes. It becomes so repeatable that then your technique then becomes so much more consistent. And, you know, a key part about mastery, I know we're talking about black belt, which is a completely different subject than mastery, but to get to mastery, you need to get to the point where you not just do a technique correctly once, you have to never do a technique wrong, or very seldomly do a technique wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like, teaching and those concrete and repeatable instructions that you have to give people helps to create like greater technical consistency.
I love that. That's really well said. It's also, I can see your like engineering mind at work as you like break that down, right?
Yeah,
repeatability and consistency and things like that. But you're 100% right. Like completely transferable concepts. And I think that that's a really excellent way of putting it.
I would really want to echo the whole, like, you don't have to teach, I guess, to be a black belt. I think that's
right.
That's a common sentiment. And that's what fourth degree is for. It's for people who are teachers, for instructors.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what that's for.
Absolutely.
Anna, earlier you mentioned that you were 16 years old when you tested for your black belt. What did that mean to you to test for that black belt for a 16-year-old Anna?
You know,
the little evil
giggle. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've run into this, not issue, but when I'm teaching, you know, the kids, and I try to explain to them, like, you know, what a black belt is, why they should want a black belt, I sometimes feel myself tripping over my words or not finding the right ones, I guess, to explain why they should want to be a black belt. Because for me, when I was going through the ranks, it was kind of just a given, like, okay, yeah, you're gonna test for your black belt. Once you go through all these belts, as long as you don't quit, you'll make it. I'm like, okay. So in my mind, it was just kind of like, okay, I guess I'm going to be a black belt soon. And, you know, I took it really, really seriously. And, you know, I would always try my best, and I would, you know, I was super like painfully shy growing up. And so much so I didn't go to my first tournament until I was a blue belt.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, blue belt is the belt right before black belt for in our art. And so I remember specifically because I have, you know, again, I was really shy, and I it's weird, I have like I have stage fright for the first time I do something. So like I was before I was really into karate, I was in like music and I was in bands, and so I would play shows, and I really liked that. But I remember the first, you know, couple months of playing shows, I'd get really nervous. And then after a while it kind of went away. It's the same thing with like tournaments that I've now looking back on it kind of found. But yeah, I just never wanted to go to one. I was super scared, super shy. Obviously, you know, I was younger, so I didn't want to lose, you know.
You still don't want to lose. Don't act like that was a younger you thing. Come on now. Yeah. Anna, I love you, but don't lie.
We're all competitive in some way.
You got
right?
me. You got me.
We are. I'm not,
you got
I'm not
me.
Throwing shade. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I know. No, it's true. but yeah, so the reason that I went to that first tournament was because my instructor told me, like, you know, now that you're getting closer to black belt, it's important that the other regional masters see who you are, and they, you know, start to witness your techniques when you're, you know, just without being in a test setting, basically. So he's like, you want to start to build a reputation for yourself in the region. So that way, when you get to the test, they can be like, oh yeah, I know Anna, you know, they have really high kicks, or they, you know, whatever the case may be. And so I like pushed myself to go to that first tournament, and from there I lost. I lost everything. It was a division of four people, and I got last place and everything. Oh, no. And but that made me be like, I think I can do better. And so then, you know, my tournament career started. But yeah, I like, you know, I took it really seriously, you know, being a black belt, and so much so that, again, you know, when I actually got it and, you know, received word, I passed, I got the belt put on me, I didn't feel like a black belt for a while. So I took it really seriously, and I really wanted it. And I remember, like, one thing that I also, I just, you know, again, growing up in the martial art, I wanted to make my instructors happy and proud and stuff. So I, you know, I, like, I knew they had this expectation of me. So I'm like, okay, I got to do it. You know, like, I just had that kind of, I don't know, responsibility or, you know, whatever, but I don't, I, when somebody, you know, believes in me or something, I don't like to disappoint them, or I'd like to do everything I can to not let them down. So I wanted to, you know, make sure that I was always on time for testing. There was only one test that I wasn't, you know, 3 months on the 3 month schedule, I guess I should say. And that was not because I didn't have enough classes, but because I didn't feel like I was ready. And so, yeah, I always kind of took it seriously and always kind of pictured myself as getting to black belt eventually. And, you know, it kind of was that thing where when I was the first couple belts, I'm like, oof, I don't know if I can be a black belt. Then, you know, got to the middle belts, kind of like, okay, I think I can do this. And then as I kept going, I'm like, all right, now it's a matter of not if, but when. So that's kind of like how I guess my mindset through the belts all the way up to black belt.
Like that. I remember I was on the panel for your toe-down belt test, and no idea. Yeah, I never competed until after that. So that's a shock to me.
Yeah.
So I guess Rachel,
yeah,
throwing a question to you now. How old were you when you tested for your black belt, and what did that mean to you?
You're making me mad. I was 22. No. I was 21, almost 22, I think. Yeah, when I tested. So it was my senior year of college. What it meant to me to test for it, or what it meant to me to get promoted to black belt?
To test.
Okay.
You can talk about your promotion too, but mainly.
Oh, no. I just wanted to make sure I answered the right question. So it kind of was synonymous with graduation for me. And I think I've talked about this previously, but because of how I started my martial arts career, being in college at the same time, you know, it was 4 years of constant, like, you know, I couldn't miss a 3 month cycle on a test, or I would have been set behind and I wouldn't have been able to test by the time I graduated. And so it was kind of a relief and a celebration of like, I made it through college with 2 degrees. I made it to my black belt test. You know, I got to this point that at certain points, whether it was martial arts or school, I'd be like at the halfway point, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's never gonna end. Like, especially those more of my school thoughts of like, oh my gosh, I'm never gonna graduate. This is taking forever. And then of course I blinked and I was graduating, but I also blinked and I was testing. And by the time I hit Chodanbo, I was like, okay, I'm testing soon. Like, it felt like it was coming up so fast, and I just didn't feel real. It didn't feel like I was actually going to be doing this. And so I would train all the time at that point. We had a few classes a week for our club, but then I was also living with my roommate at the time was a, she had just tested for EDON. She just got promoted to EDON that our senior year as well. And so I was working with her on techniques all the time. And she worked in our university theater. And so every now and then we would go to the theater, and because it was a big enough space, whether we were in the Black Box Theater or on the main stage, I don't know if anybody from our university knows that we did this, we would go into the theater because it was a big enough space besides our apartment. And I would just like be drilled by her and be like, okay, like, you know, do these one step techniques, do your forms, do your weapons. Like she would call marching patterns for me. Yeah, that was, it was intense. Like I mostly because I made it intense for myself because I really just kind of felt that imposter syndrome going into my test. As I was going and testing, I was testing with the like youth adult. No, it wasn't even that. They didn't even divide us up at the time. It was everybody. It was everybody from like.
Yeah, it was
too small
at the time.
Yeah, it, we didn't have, so now the way our black belt tests run, for those that don't know, we have enough people that are testing that we divide based on what rank you're testing for and also what age group you're in. And at the time, it was everybody from like 12-year-olds testing for their first degree black belt to like 70-year-olds testing. In hindsight, that's not really fair. But so I was on the floor testing for my first degree black belt with people that were testing for their third degree black belt. And I was like, I gotta make myself look really, really good. Thinking that I was gonna be like judged in comparison to those testing for third degree. In hindsight, now I know that like everyone's judged very differently based on what rank they're testing for, right? But I didn't really get that at the time. But yeah, so it was because of the timing of when I was graduating and also with when I was testing, it was it felt like it was this 4-year sprint of training and studying and all of these things. So for it to all happen at the same time, I tested for my black belt and about a month later I walked for my graduation. So it was a lot of emotion behind all of it. After my test, I think I cried. I don't know if it was because I was exhausted or because I was happy I finally got a chance to test. And it was, like I said, it was this 4-year sprint. I think it was a combination of all of the above. I was very dehydrated. It was a very long test. But yeah, it was just, it was amazing. It felt amazing to actually like get to that point, especially now in hindsight, knowing that I had a torn ACL the whole time. So that was fun.
That's for a different podcast.
That yeah. is a, I think that's a whole different episode that we have recorded. Yes.
So for those yeah. who yes, listen to absolutely. That one, go back and listen to that one.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Rachel, you bring up like the preparation to black belt. Cause I remember when I was teaching for a different school, TBK, last year, or no, sorry, 2 years ago. Was it last year? Well, anyways, it was recently. But I remember it was before David got promoted, and Master Helsen was telling the class, it was the black belt class, and he was telling them like, okay, all of you who are getting ready to, you know, do your test, like this is the time you have to be putting in, you have to be training as much as you can, all of, you know, this stuff. And he was saying that, you know, David's going to be promoted to master in a few weeks or, you know, a few months. But, you know, his preparation to get to that belt is what made him a master. He's already earned it. He's already done all the work. It's just the belt that needs to be put on now. Like he's a master because of all of that, you know, and that kind of like, you know, it was the perfect speech to give to like, you know, the black belt class that's getting ready to test, because that's exactly it, right? Like it's, it's, you can't just show up to the test and be like, okay, I'm going to show what I got, you know, like, I remember I got to judge one black belt test recently, and my piece of advice for them was, okay, was this, you know, one of the hardest workouts you've ever had? And a lot of them were like, oh yeah, yeah, definitely, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, that shouldn't be the case, right? Because if your guys are training and getting ready for this, you should be purposefully like doing all of your moves to the point of exhaustion, because you know that this test is going to be 3 hours long. Like, you know, you should be preparing in that kind of way. So yeah, I think that, you know, talking about any higher level of rank in martial arts, it really kind of falls on you and what, and that's too, you know, everything in martial arts is, it's all very individual, right? Like everything, you know, with sports and everything, you know, you're dependent on a team. It's, you know, you're kind of working together, but with martial arts, it's pretty much all individual, you know, like it's up to you to, if you want your kicks higher, then yeah, you can get them higher. You just got to work. So yeah, I really like that, that you did that, Rachel. That's, it's really cool to see that other people are doing that too. And not just like people that have been, I guess, told it, or people that have, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, and I hope I get this quote right. one of my former managers had a quote on her whiteboard that said, if it's something to the effect of, if it's going to be, it's up to me, which means to her, right? Like if you, it's up to you to make it happen, whether it's your job and your career, whether it's martial arts and it's your black belt or your second degree, third degree, fourth degree, whatever, opening up a studio, trying a new hobby, whatever the case may be, right? Starting a podcast, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And so really taking on that ownership and holding yourself accountable moving forward is really what's going to drive you towards your goals for sure. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, Anna.
Yeah, definitely.
There was, I guess, an episode, or rather part one of this episode, where it was Yoshi and I. The two of us were talking about and ranking which of our tests for a black belt rank were our favorite. And I guess, Rachel, for you, it's a coin flip. Well, not a coin
flip. Yeah, it's really a 50-50.
You get to decide which one it is. It's not up to chance, but... I guess, Rachel, which was your favorite of the two? Both in like the emotional high you felt afterwards and the test itself, going through the test.
Honestly, they were both so different for so many different reasons, both on how they were structured, what I was focused on, what I was dealing with personally at the time, my journey to each of them. But I think like my gut reaction answer is my first degree. Mm-hmm. It was just so emotional for so many reasons. And you know, I would finally, you know, I was finally there. I was finally on the floor testing for it. I remember telling people my freshman year of college, like friends from back home, like, oh yeah, I started doing martial arts. And the number of people that looked at me like I was a psycho, they were like, what? I was like, oh yeah, and I'm gonna test for black belt before I graduate. And they were like, yeah, right. Like, nobody believed me. And I was like,
yeah,
challenge accepted. Don't tell me, yeah, right.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah, so testing for that, I maybe TMI, I threw up slightly during that test. Was not great. I was not the only one to puke at that test. Our grandmaster was there at the time, and he was on the panel right in front of me. I was in the front line for the first like 40 minutes of the test because they forgot to rotate lines. And he was right in front of me the entire time. Like, we were lined up and I could just see his face. And then because at the time too, we did a combined test. It was such a long test. I tell people, you know, I had a 4.5-hour black belt test, and they're like, holy cow. I was like, well, yeah, it was super long. It was crazy. And that was also when we would still do brick breaks. And I have this super cool picture. Maybe I'll put it up on our Instagram page of my brick break. And I was so proud of that because I was so nervous. I had never done a brick break until like 2 weeks before the black belt test. My instructor had some bricks for us to practice because we had never done brick breaking before, because it's not something you typically do And it's expensive. So it's not like you're just going to buy a bunch of bricks for your school, right? So for those of us that were testing, which it was me testing, I think it was just me. I don't think anybody else from my class was testing for Chodon. But we did a brick break and I kept like bonking it. Like I would just like, I was just going off the top of it. I wasn't going through it. I was like, what in the heck? Why am I not going through this brick? And my instructor looked at me and he goes, oh, I was over rotating my shoulders and I didn't realize that. And he was like, be more square to it. And I did. And I went through it right after he made that correction. So I was like, okay, I'm like getting the brick comes up and they went down the line. It was very intimidating. The entire panel's watching as you go down, like this person does it, this person does it. And so it's the whole gym, all of these parents, all of these masters, all of these other black belts are looking at you. And it's very intimidating. I was like, don't mess up, don't mess up, don't mess up. I was like the third person to go. And I hit it on my first go around. I went right through it. And somebody got this killer photo of me breaking this brick. And I show that thing off every chance I get. So yeah, that was probably my favorite test for sure.
That's some bragging rights there. PSA, don't practice breaking 2 weeks before your test. Okay, at least a month. Give yourself time.
Yeah, it seems like a really bad idea in hindsight, right? Luckily, I didn't break myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Mm-hmm. All right, Anna, how about you? Now you have more to talk about, or I guess more to pick from, because you got Chodon, Edon, Samdon, and Tongsudo, Chodon, and Edon, and Hapkido. Oh my goodness, that Edon and Hapkido was a fun story.
And then you also have
1C, 2C, and are you 3C yet, or?
No, I'm only A and B.
Ah, okay. So 3C is coming up.
Yeah.
Nice. And I guess, did you explain the whole 3C thing? Is that what style that's from?
No. So yeah, that's from our Filipino martial arts. And so they do it in levels, and in each level there's an A, B, and C. So technically I'm level 1 A, B, and C certified, and then 2 A, B, and C certified. And then I think I'm 3A also. I got to double check my certificates. It's been a while since I've been to class. But I don't know. That's a tough question, because especially across the arts, it's very different, the different testing styles. If I were to say, like, the most fun one, that one, I mean, so our Filipino martial arts tests are usually fun because they're long, but they're run more or less kind of like a clinic. So it's like, you know, we'll show the required material, but like if the panel sees that there's something that we're doing, you know, slightly wrong or that they don't like, then they'll stop everyone and be like, okay, everyone, let's do it like this, you know, because this, this, and this. Yeah. And then they'll start doing little demonstrating with pens at the table and stuff. Like, you need to hit your sticks like this and like this, you know? So those are always super fun. And I like those ones a lot just because of, it was such a stark difference between the tests that I had done before. But that being said, I think my most like satisfying test, was probably also my first degree black belt test, just because, you know, it was the first like black belt test that I took, and it was the longest one out of my Tongsudo tests, because we did not only the required material, but it was like how Rachel said, it was when everybody tested with everybody. So I got to watch the, you know, first degrees and second degrees test as well. And I remember for the people testing for third degree, they had them do a bunch of just random self-defense, host and soul. And that was really fun to watch because, you know, it was actually, I believe, and David might correct me, but I believe the people going for Samdon in that test were two women. So, yep. Yep. Yeah, so it was cool, you know, to just see like oh, the two people that are going for the highest rank in this test are women, which was, you know, cool for me too, just because, you know, going through the ranks and everything as a lady and stuff. So that was cool. And what also was cool about that one was it almost felt like there was like a little fun break in between, because after we did our, you know, our warm up and our marching, they were like, okay, we're going to bring out the pads. We're going to do some jump kicks now. So it was almost like an intermission of jump kicks. And yeah. Like, I mean, I was just having fun, you know. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know if I was, to be honest, I don't remember if I was felt confident about the kicks, but it was fun. So I was like, okay, cool. You know, let's do some jump kicks. So we're doing jump kicks and everything. And then that was also back when, you know, after we do all of that, you know, we go through our forms, we go through our one steps, our sparring, our self-defense, blah, blah, blah. And the rolling and blah, blah, blah. And then after everything, they give us more conditioning to do. So then we did like, you know, a handful of the push-ups where you go like from your hand, hand, elbow, elbow, hand, elbow, elbow, you know, those ones. We did like a bunch of those. We did a bunch of, I believe we did some tung sudo jumping jacks too. So yeah, it was nice. It was a fun test, you know, cause it really kind of pushed your limits. And I went into it with the mindset, like, okay, like I'm here, I'm just going to give it all, you know, do everything I can, the best that I can. And we'll see how this goes. Mm-hmm. It was nice too, because I had a group of people that I was testing with that, you know, I was friends with and stuff. So it was me plus five others testing from my school, and four of them were testing for first degree. And then actually David was in that group too. And so he was testing for second degree. Yeah. And, yeah, and so I think that one was probably my favorite, just because, again, like it was the first test that I ever took for, you know, a high rank. And I felt pretty good about it. Like I felt like I, you know, left everything on the floor and stuff, and I wasn't too overly critical of myself, because I found that as I was, you know, testing for the higher ranks, like second and third degree, I started to reflect more and be like overly critical of myself, mm-hmm. too. So I think my first degree was probably, again, yeah, my favorite one. And yes, the hop keto tests could be their own podcast. Cause those were almost a mix of the two styles that I mentioned, where it's like very strict, but it's also kind of like
arbitrary. Yeah.
Yeah. The requirements are kind of arbitrary. So like, you know, we kind of knew what was going to be, you know, asked of us on the test, but there was also some curveballs. So those ones were fun. And like, you had to go in with a good attitude, because mm-hmm. if you were overly critical of yourself, then like, you wouldn't be happy with anything.
My hop keto test experience was not your hop keto test experience. I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
It's pretty strict for me, but I understand why your system was the way it was.
Yeah.
I remember going into our second DON test, Anna, the senior master that was going to be judging the test came up to us before the test and asked us what we were going to be doing for the test itself.
Yeah. You go, I don't know, you're supposed to tell us.
And we told him what we were going to be doing, and he was satisfied with it, so I guess it was okay. But it goes to show the more arbitrary nature of those, I guess, requirements.
Yeah.
So Anna, you had mentioned watching a test, like when the third degrees were testing, or the people that were testing for third degree, sitting down and being able to watch them, and they were doing free form self-defense techniques. So my instructor made me do that. So before I pre-tested, so in our association, you have to pre-test for black belt and pass your pre-test before you're given the okay to then test for black belt. I had to pretest my pretest as a Jodanbo. And at the time, my instructor's studio, he was like, oh yeah, come out. I'm running a belt test and you can just test at the belt test. He had a brand new studio. So his students, I think the highest rank that was being tested for was maybe a green belt, like sixth cup.
That's about right. Like, yeah.
Yep. So then the rest of the test was just Rachel on the floor and no one around.
Pre-test, spotlight Rachel.
Yeah. Well, then we get to a point where my instructor goes, okay, freeform self-defense, and has Yoshi and one of the other black belts who is there as an instructor helping and like proctoring the test come, and he goes, my instructor goes, okay, Yoshi and so-and-so grab Rachel. And so they would, the two of them would grab me and I would have to get out of it. Well, at one point, the way that these two yahoos grabbed me was one grabbed my ankles and the other grabbed my wrists, and they were carrying me like rotisserie Rachel style, like like, you know, the scene in Pirates of the Caribbean 2 where Jack Sparrow's like on the spit, like that was what I looked
we
like.
We were kind of churn here, but yeah.
Yeah. You weren't like spinning me. So of course, like, the only thing that I've ever been taught in that really bizarre scenario is just like, just keep moving, right? Just so I'm just like spinning myself as much as I can until one of these jerks lets go.
So you were doing the rotisserie part.
Oh yeah, I was the one spinning. Yeah, spin. Yeah, exactly.
Generating rotisserie.
Uh huh.
I'm not sure what possessed us to do it that way, but it was.
I don't know either, but the master instructor who was there was like just absolutely cracking up, was like, what on earth? So that was
Rachel. I could just picture you like Yoshi and the other person holding you on either end, you know, and you just start like thrashing
your
body.
That was exactly, it was like a fish out of water. I'm just like flopping around as much as humanly possible. Because like, I'm like,
and
I
were
can't...
you yapping too?
What?
Were you kiapping too?
I don't
man,
remember.
That would have been better, but no, I think that. I was just yelling, just grunting. So bad.
Because I had to do something very similar at my Edan test against someone who was teaching for Samdan. And it was me and another person say, grab onto him and don't let go. Don't let him get out. And so I guess I've had prior experience doing that multiple times. So. I guess maybe that's why.
Did you hold them rotisserie Rachel style?
No, it was a lot. It was very, very different.
That's the official name of that, by the way.
Yeah, it's gonna be number 31, Hosen Sewell.
Number 31.
Added in. Done.
Hello, this is Yoshi again. That was the end of part 2. Stay tuned to Urban Martial Artists for part 3. Thank you.
Hey everybody, if you liked our episode, please don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us. We are on Instagram at Urban Martial Artist. We are on Facebook, also the Urban Martial Artist. Our website is urbanmartialartists.com, and feel free to reach out at our Gmail, urbanma312@gmail.com. Thanks.